Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Gridiron Chefs with your host, James Greenwood.
Look, guys, the comparison between Jamarcus Russell and Cam Newton are completely baseless. Cam Newton has 10 times the work ethic and is 10 times more athletic than Jamarcus Russell will ever be.
And Tyrone Powell.
So, all in all, if you're going to compare him to Brady, you're going to compare him to Manning, those two are arguably automatic going into the Hall of Fame. But come on, man, this guy has done work from 99 to about 2009 before he got shipped out back.
Here on SportsCityChef.com.
Good afternoon, Sports City. This is the Gridiron Chefs. I'm your host, James, the Gridiron Chef Greenwood, and with me, as always, is my co-host, Mr. TP Thomas. TP, buddy, how you doing today?
Took off the blazer, loosened up the tie, stepped aside to kitchen. Thomas is alive, man. I'm feeling pretty rejuvenated, man. We got to get this thing popping. 2 hours of that good old NFL, whatever you want to talk about with the pork skin, whatever you want to throw around the kitchen, we got you, man. The call the number is 917-889-9592. Continue to show that love to the Sports City Chefs on iTunes.com. We've been getting these downloads. The numbers have been going up. I thank everybody that has been checking the chefs out and coming to get their dish for real.
And we've got like half a dozen other folks here in the kitchen, starting with from the Big D. Now, I'm not talking about Dallas. I'm talking about the Detroit. Tim Klonica, how you doing today?
I'm feeling good, feeling great. Saturday afternoon, ready to rock out with some football. And I got a topic I want to throw around later in the show. So I'm ready to roll.
All right. On top of that, from the 571 repping the 412, it is Aaron Sirius Simmons. Man, how you doing today?
What's up, gentlemen? It's a pleasure to be with you all on a Saturday edition of the Gridiron Chefs, man. Not too much football, Super Bowl to talk about, but, yo, we got a lot of stuff going around, man. Let's get it done.
All right.
Did we lose James already?
I hope not. James, are you there?
Hello?
Okay, James, are you there, James?
Can you hear me?
Yes,
yeah.
We got you.
All right. We've also got Eric from the 970. How are you doing today?
Hey, good. Good morning. Good afternoon, gentlemen. Let's get into it. We got a lot of football to talk. Got a nice Super Bowl ahead of us. Let's get right into this.
All right. And also, we've
got Super Bowl in years.
To Sports City Kitchen, Brandon Burtis. Who's been doing a hell of a job on the Sports City Chefs blog, man. Brandon, how you doing today?
I'm doing good, James. Is it just me or the Sirius have literally, like, one number shy of an entire Social Security number, the E-Reps?
You know, man, brother trying to get paid, man, so I got to rep 2 zero codes, you know what I'm saying? That's short of a Social Security number, man.
Is it possible? Can we get those last two numbers of that Social Security number? We are not condoning any illegal activity on this show.
All right, and last but not least, we got John, a.k.a. JC, new to Sports City's Kitchen, man. How you doing today?
I'm great. I'm glad to be back. Feel much better. Let's get it rolling.
All right, so I guess we've got to start with the most uninteresting game of the entire year, and that is the Pro Bowl. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, this time of year again, where James gets on his high horse and talks about how this game is complete crap. So if you want to get up, get a drink, now would be about the time, because it's probably a repeat of what you heard last year. This is by far the worst football game of the season, of the year. And this is regardless of if you include all NFL games, if you included preseason, if you included Arena League and Canadian League football, this is the worst football game of the year. If you look at how completely meaningless this game has become, half of the starting players in this game decided not to come. This is supposed to be an amazing honor. That's what it's supposed to be. This is supposed to be where the fans and the coaches come together and we select and honor the top players in the NFL, in the world, are supposed to be here at this game, but nobody cares. Honestly, nobody cares a lick. And it's about time we got rid of the game. But I'm going to ask you guys something. I want to fix it.
Okay. James, you got to do something with the technical difficulty. I don't know what's up with the line, but until he can get that back in order, I'm going to throw this around to you to see how many people either like or dislike the standpoint on the Pro Bowl. JP, I'll go to you first, since you were the last one we let in the kitchen. Your thoughts on the Pro Bowl and the event alone?
Well, the event is completely irrelevant. You know, it was irrelevant before they moved it to before the Super Bowl. Now that they moved it to the week before the Super Bowl, it's even worse. You don't even have that scene of when the Super Bowl champions show up and they get to celebrate their championship with their other players. You know, they're better off doing something like an awards show where the Pro Bowl selections get some kind of stupid award that means nothing. That more people would be more interested in something like that than they would to watch this sorry-ass game.
All right, am I back?
Yes, you are.
All right, let's see how long that lasts. Okay. All right, so we'll go to Brandon next. Brandon, the Pro Bowl. Now, I know everybody's going to say it's a useless game, and they're right. So how do we fix it? Or do we need to fix it and, you know, just get rid of the whole game and all the gravitas to it in general?
Well, I mean, I'll be the first person to agree with probably everybody in the kitchen that it's a completely useless game. The players don't care about it, shown by, you know, the amount of players that have you know, retracted from playing in it. And, you know, they honestly, even when they play in it, they don't care about winning. And why should they? It's not a very big payday compared to what they might miss out on if they get injured playing hard in the game. That being said, however, I mean, there's several things that could be done to fix the competitiveness and the spirit of the Pro Bowl. I don't know that the National Football League is really going to entertain the idea of doing any of these things, but, you know, you have different options. You have, you know, the option of, you know, making it so that there's some sort of relevancy to winning the game, whether it's, you know, whether it's the person, instead of having a coin flip at the beginning of the Super Bowl, the winning team gets to pick, you know, whether they want the ball first. I really don't know how you can fix it as far as that goes, but you can, as you know, put into some sort of rule or put in some sort of legislation with the NFL Player Office and with DeMora Smith and the Player Association. You could possibly put something in to where these players, if they're voted in by the fans or if they're selected to the team, that they're obligated to go unless injury prevents them from going. And that injury would have to be determined by a doctor or something like that. I mean, really, James, I think the problem is right now that we're grasping at straws trying to fix something. I absolutely grew up loving the Pro Bowl. The more I learned about football, the more I started to despise the Pro Bowl. And now that I know a decent amount about football, I can't even stand watching the game. I wish they could somehow capture that innocence that I had when I was a kid watching it, just being happy that my favorite players were on the field. But the issue is now we can't even get our favorite players on the field. Nobody wants to show up to the game. So I think the Pro Bowl is actually in a lot of trouble right now, man.
All right, Eric, I'm going to kind of switch up the question for you a little bit. Is it just that the players are not showing up? Is that, I mean, yes, we understand that the league has become increasingly health conscious, so they can't go out there and act like this is a real game, you know, because injuries would ensue and nobody would show up. But
yeah,
would the fact that, you know, guys like Tom Brady show up, guys like Calvin Johnson show up to the Pro Bowl,
Aaron Rodgers,
guys showing up to the Pro Bowl mean that it'd be a more interesting game?
You know what? Here's the problem. You know, like we just said, half the players aren't showing up now. None of the Super Bowl team players show up. So that's a real, I mean, that's a huge hindrance there. Why did Goodell ever change that before the Super Bowl is beyond me? But not only is it the players not showing up, these players aren't giving 110% like they were in the season and like the players we grew up watching the Pro Bowl did. They had competitions, they had skills competitions, they had meet and greet with fans. I mean, they had a whole festive weekend that basically has disappeared since Goodell has taken the helm. So if you ask me, it's more than the players. It's the players showing up and basically turning it into a circus. They're not playing football. They're giving a half effort. So, and that right there, all the football fans, not just casual fans, they will lose interest, which we have seen. So that's my take.
All right, Sirius. So the one thing that seems to be universal is that people want to see the skills competition is back. Hell, the NFL Network could still plays the skills competition from 2001 till 2006. And guess what? People still watch it. Probably more people watch that than actually watch the Pro Bowl. So is that the answer? You know, fly these guys to Hawaii, give them some sort of skills competition type thing and forget about the game?
Well, I mean, that's part of it. You know, first of all, I agree with everybody else is saying you want to – I would move it back to after the Super Bowl. That way, you know, the two teams that are in the Super Bowl, if they have representation in the Pro Bowl, and 99.9% of them do, will be able to participate, play, get the congratulatory, you know, words and, you know, praise from, you know, their peers, their fans. You know, because, again, as you see it now, you know, it's the week before. Nobody wants to play, you know. Ray Lewis got voted. He ain't playing. Patrick Willis got voted. He's not playing. You know, so, I mean, some key cogs for both, you know, the NFC and AFC representation is not playing because they have a Super Bowl to play. But after that, it'll be, you know, if they move it after the Super Bowl, these guys will be more inclined to play, win or lose, unless your name is Thomas Brady. But anyway, that's another conversation. The skill competition is a great move. I was upset when they seen it go, when they cut it out, you know, because it was fun, you know, hit the moving targets, you know, do an obstacle course, you know, throw the pass, hit the corner of the end zone, the kickers, you know, punt and kick, you know what I mean? It was fun, you know, and I've sat here on several occasions and watched the repeats and watch the reruns, and also the whole flag football celebrity, you know, player flag football thing that they do. I mean, it was just fun to be selected or a part of Pro Bowl weekend. You know, I'm not liking where it's at now. I probably will still, you know, have the game on in the background, you know, because I'm just a football fanatic like that. You know, I'm not to the point where I just can't watch it all together. You know, it's fun to dream. You know, Peyton Manning throwing, you know, a bomb to A.J. Green. It's great to dream of Adrian Peterson taking a handoff, you know, from, you know, Drew Brees or something like that. I mean, that's kind of how the Miami Heat situation panned out. It was both in the All-Star game. So who knows what happens with free agency and this, that, and the third. But, you know, I remember as a kid playing Madden and playing the different video games and using the NFC, AFC, and, you know, playing the Pro Bowl. So, you know, the kid in me kind of comes out when I see this time of year. But they got to fix it to the point where more fans would be drawn to it, more fans are not going to skip over it, more fans will want to, you know, go down to Hawaii with their friends and their family and say, hey, I was a part of Pro Bowl weekend and had a good time watching them, you know, punt a ball 60 yards or something like that. So.
All right, Tim, same question to you. Pro Bowl, what are your thoughts, man?
First, Sirius, is there any truth to the rumor that you would use the Pro Bowl team against other people's regular team in Madden so you could win?
You know, it's funny because I really would. Like, when I started playing Madden, man, I was sorry at Madden. So I would use the AFC team, and my friends would use, like, the regular team. I would just beat on Detroit, ironically.
Okay. Wait.
The AFC versus Detroit.
All right, you're just bringing it back around. Too safe, friend. James, as far as the Pro Bowl goes, it is. It's almost unwatchable. I will tune in. I'll check it out for a couple minutes just to see what's going on. As far as my thoughts on the skills competition, yes, I would love to see that. Also, you know, as kind of a twist, and it's something that hockey did, and I think it would be kind of cool with the Pro Bowl also, is like the fantasy draft. Move it to after the Super Bowl. The two Super Bowl teams have a captain, and the captain just picks teams, like it's pickup. I'd like to see something like that go on as far as the Pro Bowl goes. Because for hockey, it worked for hockey. I tuned in. I watched it. It was a whole show of them just picking the roster. I mean, that way you're not just getting NFC players throwing the NFC players. You're getting, you know, you might have Aaron Rodgers throwing to, you know, A.J. Green. Things like that could happen. So I think that would add a little bit more excitement. And if you want these guys to play hard, the NFL is going to have to pony up and ensure the contract. That's what's going to have to happen. If these guys are not going to show up and give it their all and get hurt without any incentive as to being able to get paid next year. So if the NFL wants these guys to show up and wants them to play, they're going to have to ensure the deal and say, hey, if you get hurt in our Pro Bowl for our fans, then we will pay you next year's contract.
All right, TP, what about you? What are your thoughts on this whole Pro Bowl thing?
I absolutely love the Pro Bowl. The Pro Bowl is one awesome event. It showcases every player. No, yeah, I mean, it's going to be cliches all around. I tried to change it up and couldn't find any humor and try to throw it around. But, I mean, the one thing that actually sold it down the river for me, I don't know if you guys remember, it was the year that they actually tried to move the Pro Bowl to Miami. They moved it to Miami and had the game there. DeSean Jackson caught a pass on Revis, and Revis stopped running. Like, Revis didn't even want to chase DeSean Jackson. It was like, what? Like he's just going to score? Like that's that? Like, that's how you guys are approaching this game? So after I saw that, I mean, there was clearly other games that, you know, you didn't see any effort come out for both sides of the field, and you want to see guys go off. I mean, there was some games where Fitzgerald had a ton of catches. There was times when Matt Ryan was connected with Calvin, and he was loving everything about Calvin. Now Calvin doesn't go to the game. Now, if you know, some guys are feeling sour, that's what I really think it is. When some guys feel sour about the season, oh, I'm not going to go to the Pro Bowl. I'm going to just chill out at home, which is their right. I mean, they don't have to go there, and if they win, what do they – I think they receive a $50,000 or $20,000 check. Like, some of these athletes laugh at that money, so – at the end of the day, they got the right to make up their mind. If there were anything, like if I could come up with a better solution to this, I don't know if they're out there listening, 2 to 3 weeks after the Super Bowl. Let's do it like that. 2 to 3 weeks after the Super Bowl, then you could get a game where everybody that played in the Super Bowl can be in the game. What is it about if you're asking the people of America or the people that watch the NFL to give their opinion on who should be a part of the Pro Bowl and their player doesn't get to play at all, especially if they're in the Super Bowl and they're waving, you know, walking through like, oh, we got a game next week, so we're just coming to Hawaii for today and just watch the festivities and then get ready for the game. Like, no, let everybody go through their Disneyland stuff and, you know, go through getting over the Super Bowl hangover and they get to Hawaii, enjoy their vacation for real. Like, some people are still worried about the Super Bowl, even if they lost in the AFC or AFC championship game. You think people that are losing that AFC or NFC championship game want to play football that next week, knowing that they were a game away from the Super Bowl? The timing is definitely wrong. They should, if they want to scenario this somehow, wait at least 2 or 3 weeks after the Super Bowl is played. You might build up a better draw of people watching it, and everything will be out of the way. You wouldn't have to worry about injuries or people coming back from, or worried about playing in the Super Bowl or whatever, or being sour about their loss. Right now, just a total disarray on how they're approaching the situation.
And you know,
can
what?
Can I chime in on that real quick?
Yeah, go right ahead.
The problem with that idea is most of the players that are going to the Pro Bowl have already been off 4 weeks. Now you're asking them to be off for another 4 weeks, which in turn is going to take away from their off-season program, going to take away from all the rest period. And the other thing that's interesting is you guys want a more competitive Pro Bowl. You have not named one defensive player of all the players you mentioned. If you want a more competitive Pro Bowl, then you need the defensive players to start getting into the mix. You need the linebackers to start crushing people. You need the Sioux to start stopping people when they're down. That's what you need to get it going.
I don't know if you need Sioux stomping on people, but you do need some, you know, defenses punishing people for sure.
But that
goes back to the whole thing I said. You need to ensure contracts then, because no one's going to hit anybody, and someone's not going to get hit if they're not insured that they're going to get their money. Let's face it, guys. These guys want to get paid. That's the reason they play the game. For a lot of these guys, is because they could have played another sport, but they wanted the bigger payday. Which, you know, look at a guy like Colin Kaepernick. He could have played baseball, but the bigger payday lied in football for him. So that's why he went to football. He got drafted to the Chicago Cubs. You know, I mean, these guys want their money, and that's the biggest thing. If they're going to get hit or they're going to hit somebody and take a chance of getting hurt, they want that contract insured. They do not want to lose out.
You're absolutely right, and it's never going to happen.
But, you know, there's more players in the NFL than not that play the game because they absolutely love football. People like Russell Wilson and Colin Kaepernick didn't leave baseball because of the payday. They left baseball because their heart lied with football. Colin Kaepernick's getting $500,000, okay? He didn't plan on starting this year, so the guy hasn't even made any money yet. These players play for the heart of football, and that is the only sport that is left, if you ask me, you know, that they do love to play the game, that it isn't about the money. I mean, you got grown men acting like children out there. I mean, they're going nuts. They're loving it. They're pumped up. They love hitting people. They love playing the game. So, I mean,
the money thing
is there with a few players, but not the vast majority of the NFL. That's mainly just the divas. So
that's a lie.
What about that? That's a lie.
Just for the simple fact that their contracts are coming up. What do? The first thing they want to do is renegotiate for guaranteed money. Is that not what they do? That's to say that it's not about money. Yeah,
well, of course you're going to get paid in the Pro Bowl, but they love playing that game. When they interview these players. I mean, how many baseball players or basketball players do you say that I would play this game for free? Which, I can't even count how many NFL players say.
There is a ton of guys who would play for free. The problem is they're not playing for free, so it's very easy for them to say that. In football, nobody's playing for free. Nobody's putting that type of hurting on their body to play a game, and they're going to play it for free. I don't care how much they love it. And I'm not talking about the Pro Bowl money. I'm talking about when a guy's contract comes up, the first thing, or when it's a year away, the first thing he does is want to renegotiate so he can go ahead and get guaranteed money so he's not taking the chance of getting hurt. This is the exact reason why all the players hate the franchise tag. This is the exact reason why guys will sit out with the franchise tag until they get a contract. To sit there and say that these guys are the love of the game. Yes, that's correct for, you know, everyone. They all love the game.
No, I completely agree with your standpoint there, but when you got the other organizations You know, when their players are giving their all in the All-Star games, I mean, come on, it's kind of piss poor because, you know, there's risk for injury in every game. I mean, obviously you're not going to be out there like the Steelers and Ravens where they're trying to bash each other. They just want a competitive NFL. I'm not asking for, you know, people to be laying bone-crushing career-ending injury hits in a Pro Bowl, but, you know, I mean, make it interesting, like when we saw it growing up, like with the Jerry Rices, the Michael Irvings, the Emmitt Smith, the Elways, the Lawrence Taylors, and so on, you know? I mean, those guys brought it, and, you know, that's all I'm asking, and that's, you know, the big deal here. How are they going to fix that?
You want to make it more interesting, make it a futures game. Have all the first and second year players, like the NBA does it, throw them in a mix and do it that way.
I like that idea.
Here's something that...
Whoever said the hockey idea, too, I mean, that wouldn't be a bad idea, too. That would completely save it. You bring the skills competition back, and then you have a draft where players actually have fun with it, and they compete. I mean, that's the only way to save the game. You got to change it.
Okay, so I do want to get away from this topic. One thing I will say is, perhaps having an incoming rookies versus current rookies game would be kind of interesting. That'd be something that I would watch. But I do want to get away from this Pro Bowl topic and move on to the Jets. They have a couple of topics, a bunch of topics kind of flowing around about them. A team that's been irrelevant for 3 months is always in the news, it seems. They finally hire a general manager, John Idzik. Is the guy who that just finally got to come in and actually take over this sorry franchise. And while we're not really, or at least I'm not a guy who really knows guys that are deeper in the front office, so we're going to kind of gloss over that and get to the two other topics that are going on with the New York Jets right now. At first, I'm going to go with the more prominent one, which is Darrell Revis. There is talk that the new general manager is going to strongly consider dealing Darrell Revis. Now, Darrell Revis, yeah, we get it, best corner in the game, assuming that he comes back healthy. But the other real issue with Darrell Revis is that it seems that after every other year, he comes back and says, I want more money after another player gets a bigger contract than him. He says, I'm the best corner in the game, and if another corner has a bigger contract than me, I'm going to sit out until I get that contract. So that's a lot to kind of put on a plate. Now, there are some teams that are cap-strapped and are not going to be able to even think about trading for Darrell Revis. But, Tim, I'm going to ask you this question first. One, what is Darrell Revis worth as far as compensation? Two, is he worth, as good as he is he worth that headache every other year?
That's tough. I mean, for me, I don't think I'd put up with him. I understand he's a great player, and I understand he's a shutdown corner, but coming off of an injury, the guy is constantly asking for more money, which, you know, he's not playing for the love of the game, obviously. It's too much for me. I mean, if you were asking me, I'm a Lions fan, if you were asking me, should the Lions go get him, I want to say yes because we need corners, but I honestly don't think I could pull the trigger on a guy like that. I don't think he's worth the headache. I understand great player and everything, but if you're going to have to worry about this guy sitting out, and he showed how serious he is about sitting out, it's not worth the time, it's not worth the energy, and he is coming off a major knee injury. So I would definitely not go ahead and try to go after Revis, especially with him saying he wants franchise quarterback money. You're a corner. Okay, you're not a quarterback. There's a big difference.
All right, Sirius, I'm going to bring this to you. what would you give? Because there are a lot of Steelers fans out there that are talking Darrell and Ike manning the corner positions in Pittsburgh. So what would you give for Darrell Revis?
You know, it's weird, you know what I'm saying? I mean, I would love to have Darrell Revis in Pittsburgh. You know, when I heard about this story, along with a few other stories that are possibilities for my squad this offseason, this one really excited me because, again, you get a healthy Darrell Revis, ain't nobody throwing nothing. No way, you know, unless you take out the middle of the field. But compensation-wise, I'm not sure financially or player personnel-wise we're in a position to do that. You know, let's keep in mind, gentlemen, and again, we'll talk about this when the front office show returns after the season comes to a close, about, you know, the financial side of situations and our squad, we are still tremendously over the cap. You know, the biggest issue that we had this past offseason was the whole Mike Wallace thing, and that was a big issue. We wanted to re-sign Mike Wallace, but we couldn't because of our cap situation. That probably did not go away, you know. So this is not the situation that we're going to have to address. So as far as cap situations and cap rules and, you know, cap hits and things like that, I'm not sure financially we're able to do that. But, you know, just from a fantasy standpoint, I would love to have Darrell Revis in Pittsburgh. And I'm even willing to give up. Now, people are going to crucify me. You know, Polamalu can roll, as far as I'm concerned. That dude can roll. You know, I love the guy. He's one hell of a ball player. Very injury-prone right now, you know, on the tail end of his career, in my opinion. I think his best years are somewhat behind him. Polamalu is a possibility. A couple other names do come to mind, but... yeah, being a 2-4 out there, yeah, I would love that a lot.
Hey, serious, what? If you trade Troy Polamalu, does he come standard with the crutches?
I think he may. And a head and shoulders bottle.
Well, I mean, but here's the thing, and serious, you're not that far off. If you went with maybe Troy Polamalu and a second-round draft pick or something of that nature, that according to this site, and, of course, I'm not sure exactly how accurate this is because I'm not privy to such information, Pittsburgh Steelers are right now sitting at a staunch $10.8 million over the cap as scheduled. Of course, there is going to be an extension to the salary cap, which we're not quite sure what that's going to be. But as of right now, yeah, the Pittsburgh Steelers would have to give up some considerable coin to make the salaries kind of balance out. But, Eric, I'm going to change the question for you. If you're the Jets, what do you ask for Darrell Revis? What is the compensation that you would expect from getting from trading a Darrell Revis away?
I would go with a first round draft pick, obviously, or try to go with a quarterback, because other than a quarterback, what do you really need for the Jets? I mean, they can go after a receiver in free agency. They got two decent ones, but here's the deal. Why would they want to get rid of their cornerstone of the defense? The Jets never cease to amaze me. It's like they're running a soap opera over there or something instead of trying to win football games. So, you know, I completely agree with Cromartie. I mean, no, don't trade this guy. What are you doing? We need him. If he can, I mean, the Jets need to try to get him on a stabilized contract, okay, and try to get in his contract. If he refuses, then, you know, he's immediately terminated or something like that, because you can't keep having holdout after holdout. So if they can't come to an agreement, obviously they're going to have to move him, you know, for that purpose. But other than that, this is your cornerstone to your defense. You don't want to just be giving this guy away for peanuts. So, I mean, they're going to have to go for a quarterback that can start or a high draft pick, for sure. And or throw in another cornerback that's decent that can kind of plug the hole. So it's kind of a ridiculous move in psychobabble coming out of New York again.
Well, okay, so I do have currently the teams that are on top as far as cap space is concerned. Right now, the Cincinnati Bengals are on top with a whopping $55.1 million in cap space. Now, just for note, according to the NFL Collective Bargaining Agreement, teams actually have to pay a higher percentage of the cap than they did last year. So, according to this, the Cincinnati Bengals, I believe, have to spend an extra $20 million this season just to hit the cap floor. That's important because that open with a team like Cincinnati, who's always there, always on the cusp of doing something in the playoffs, this could be something pretty big for them. Another team, Cleveland, a team that's been kind of in the doldrums for a while. They do have one very good corner in Hayden. Adding Darrelle Revis on the other side could be a possibility. Another team that is going to be forced to spend money this offseason is the Indianapolis Colts. Another team, 11-win team, has one good corner in Vontae Davis. Adding Revis could really help that situation out as well. And there are quite a few other teams that have that cap space, but they have a lot of players that need to be signed as well. So Brandon, which of those teams do you think is the best fit for Darrelle Revis?
You know who he's going to say. He's a Bengals fan.
Well, James, first off, if you could like maybe push the mute button on Sirius over there. The bottom line is, I'm going to say this. Shame on you for getting my hopes up as a Bengals fan that Darrelle Revis would come anywhere near us. But what I'll say is this, it makes a little bit more sense than you would think because of the extra pick that we have from Oakland and the Carson Palmer trade. We do have an extra pick in the early second round that we wouldn't have had otherwise that could possibly be dealt. That being the case, plus the cap room, I don't really see us making a move like that because we've traditionally never made a move like that. I don't think that is there a tornado somewhere?
There might be.
Anyway, I'm not really sure as to how viable it is for that move to happen in Cincinnati. As a Bengals fan, would I love to see it happen? I absolutely would. But I don't think that will happen. Now, honestly, I see a Cleveland team that is trying to retool and that is trying to, turn things around, making a strong push to try and pick up Darrelle Revis, which would just really upset me to have to play him twice a year. But, I think that's probably the best bet as far as a team, especially in the AFC North, trying to do it. Pittsburgh would love to have him, but they don't have the cap room for it at all.
All right. John, same question to you. In a dream scenario, what team do you think would be best for Darrelle Revis?
Well, in a dream scenario, my team would get Revis. But a couple things. First, the thing you have to remember about Revis, it's not every other year he's coming out and saying, somebody got paid more than me, I need more money. It's a lot more in-depth than that. It's partly to do with his stupid coach not keeping his mouth shut and saying how great he is. Put yourself in his shoes. If you're at your job, and your boss goes around telling everybody that you're the best at what you do, at some point, are you not going to go, I think I might need some more cash if my boss says I'm so good? That's part one of it.
And I, well, that's true if we're talking about your job or my job where we didn't sign a contract. We didn't sign a contract saying, hey, I'll play for this amount of money for this amount of years, and, you know, we'll renegotiate 2 or 3 years down the road. That's kind of the nature of the beast. But it's a whole different thing to say, okay, I signed this contract, I'm happy with this contract, and they're going to pay me X amount of dollars at the beginning of my contract, and then they're going to substantially pay me less because they paid me so much up front, and then turn around and say, well, at this point, I'm not making as much money as I used to. I want a new contract, and continue to do that over and over again when you've signed a contract with the expressed point of saying, hey, I realize I'm getting a lot of money up front. You're going to pay me less later. And that's the big issue I have with it.
Yeah, but that leads me to part two of it, which this last contract was more or less a Band-Aid contract. They were going to sit down in a couple of years, basically this offseason, and get him a new big mega contract. Remember, Revis's contract is only for next year. So that's why the talk of contract is up again. And next year he's only making $6 million, which is a bargain for a team. Now, as for what you can get in a trade for Revis, the Jets, unless you're going to give them a quarterback that they can build on, they cannot take any other players back. They are so far above the cap, it is silly. When you look at Sanchez's contract, when you look at some of the other, the Brickishaw, Mangold, guys like that, when you look at all the contracts that the Jets have on the books that they are guaranteed to pay, that they have to find a way to get the money under the cap, there's no way they could take another player back. They have free agency coming. They have a draft coming. You know, they have guys that they're just not going to be able to re-sign. They're going to have a lot of minimum players on their team. You thought that team was a mess this year, you'll love 2013. The Jets are not going to have a choice but to trade Revis. They're going to get a first and a third for him. I would sign for it right now. I would do it in a heartbeat. He takes away the best receiver on the other side. I have no worries about the ACL. He'll get healed. Modern science is phenomenal when it comes to that. Just look at Adrian Peterson. I have no qualms whatsoever to give a 1-3 for Revis and just enjoy watching him 16 weeks a year.
All right. So TP, I guess we have to come to you next on this. I know we both would love to see Darrelle Revis in Detroit, even if it is for a 1 year type thing. I would have no qualms about giving up a third round pick to rent Darrelle Revis for a year. That would be enough to get us deep into the playoffs, in my opinion. But in all likelihood, Detroit's not going to be in the running for it. Right now, just for notes, the Jets are scheduled to be over $20 million over the cap. So that's a big problem for them. So they do have to start cutting stuff. And the bad part is if they can't trade Mark Sanchez, then
they can't
cut him. That's the thing. They can't cut him because all of that money is guaranteed. So it doesn't help their cap situation at all.
Let me jump in real quick. If they trade Sanchez, it's a bigger cap hit. The cap hit is actually double. If they cut him, it's $6 million. If they trade him, it's $11 million.
So either way, they can't get rid of Sanchez. There's a few players that are just too good for them to get rid of. So they are in kind of a hell right now that they can't do anything. Their general manager put them in such a bad position financially that Darrelle Revis is the only asset they have that they can get rid of based off of their current cap situation. So I guess the question is, if you're the first of all, my guess would be you're looking for draft picks. So the question is, do you look for high draft picks like first and second round guys, or do you look for a second, a couple thirds, and a couple fourths, like, and kind of draw that out? Because right now, the only way you're going to get the situation set up is for you to get cheap talent. So what are your thoughts on that?
Well, me personally, the one way I'm looking at it is that he does not move. The Jets cannot afford to lose a guy like Revis. They can't. Because if you look at the way that these guys played last year, these guys are on defense a ton of times of the game. They need him right now. Even if his will is bad and they're working on him getting back, him and Cromartie are mainstay. But if they can't retain him and he has to go elsewhere, I'd have to find an interesting team for him to go to make the best playoff push ever. So they actually enticed the Atlanta Falcons. That's interesting to see if the Falcons can make that assessment and they're trying to bring him down there. Because him and Asante could actually work at being devils on the outside. So that's probably one favorable outlook if they can make that happen. Outside of that, I'm questioning if the Jets let him go altogether. I think he should stay put right in MetLife Stadium.
All right, so I'm going to move on to the next topic. And it's another Jets topic. Antonio Cromartie came out and said, Mark Sanchez is not the problem. The problem is everybody around Mark Sanchez. Not in so many words, but you understand what I'm saying. He's saying that Mark Sanchez is not the problem in New York with the Jets. TP, what are your thoughts on that? Is this just a guy getting behind his quarterback, or do you think there's some credence to that?
They should have grabbed somebody else. All of the available receivers that were out there without a job, and they basically went with what they had, a part of the organization, and thinking that they could make it further. Let's be real. They went 6-10 or 7-9. Like, that's not going to cut it with the receivers that they had. I mean, Curley, he could be a valuable guy in the slot, but you had guys like Plaxico that was a part of your organization a year previous. You didn't want to go with Chad Johnson. I know that he caused a little melee down there in Miami. I think that was more or less because of the situation where he got arrested. They could have picked him up. I mean, a lot of people like to, downplay T.O., but T.O. definitely could have been a better part of that offense for the Jets than what they had going out for passes this season. So if they could bring some attention to that team on the outside, I could attest for it. But then again, some of the mistakes that Sanchez makes, the interceptions that he throws, the miscues, the fumbles, I mean, he has to clear that up. He's been in the league for a decent amount of time right now. Enough is enough.
All right, JC, going to go to you next on this. Is Sanchez the problem? And if he's not the problem, what is the problem?
Well, Sanchez is definitely part of the problem. You cannot throw the interceptions that he throws at times, being in the league as long as he's been in the league. That being said, it is completely odd and amazing how many of Sanchez's teammates are actually still behind him. And, you know, being around the Jets and having to hear about the Jets every day and, you know, Jets news, all this garbage, the Tebow thing really wiped him out. There was, from week one, the Tebow thing pretty much had his head destroyed. And it just went all downhill from there. Sperano's offense was as bad. I don't think it would have mattered who the quarterback was. It just so happened it was Sanchez's dumb luck. Sperano's offense was terrible. The fact that the Jets got him no weapons at all, the fact that his tight end was missing the first part of the season, the fact that guys like Braylon Edwards, who he had great relationships with, they let him go years prior. They let Cotchery go. They let Plaxico go, who had a very productive year in the red zone the year before. Santonio gets hurt. I mean, they have no running game. They have no explosion. If you look at the Jets team and you look at their offense, who scares you? Nobody.
Nobody.
No running back, no receiver, no nothing. So as easy as it is to blame Sanchez, if you have no weapons, how can you shoot the gun? How can you fight somebody? How can you battle the war? You can't.
Okay. Brandon, same question to you. is Sanchez the problem, or can they build a team around Sanchez and make him better?
Look, I mean, the funny NFL picture was put up right after the season was over, saying, "How do you say Romo in Spanish?" And you say it Sanchez. You know, this is the deal, guys. Mark Sanchez is not a terrible quarterback. Mark Sanchez is not a good quarterback either, though. Mark Sanchez is serviceable. He can distribute a little bit. He can get things done. But, you know, the real issue at hand is just the lack of talent and the lack of weapons on offense for them. And also, you know, you have to look into the fact that you have three former All-Pro offensive linemen that did not hold up their end of the deal as an offensive line. There were people in the face of Sanchez all the time, and part of that goes back to play calling. A lot of that goes back to Sperano being very predictable in the plays that they were calling, and so defenses were able to tee off on him. But at the same time, guys, you know, when you've got players like a DeBrickashaw Ferguson, who's been an All-Pro, Nick Mangold, who's been an All-Pro, I mean, these guys are great offensive linemen in the league, and they couldn't keep anybody off of Mark Sanchez at all. That's a huge problem, and no quarterback is going to have success, you know, with somebody in their face all the time. It's just not going to happen. Now, I'm not a Mark Sanchez believer. I definitely wouldn't be taking the stand that Antonio Cromartie's taken, saying that, you know, he's our guy and Mark's a good quarterback and blah blah blah. I mean, I think Cromartie runs his mouth a little bit. He doesn't possess that filter between his brain and his mouth, so that's an issue sometimes. But, you know, in this situation, I think, in all honesty, if you do put pieces around Mark Sanchez, if you do give him an offensive system that, you know, is less predictable and a little bit more, you know, successful in this league, that I think Mark Sanchez can do just fine. I mean, he showed that, you know, despite his inabilities, he can still take a team to an AFC championship game twice in a row. So, I mean, you can't completely downplay it. Do I think that if they go out and they get rid of Sanchez, which would hurt them cap-wise, I understand, but I don't think that there's anybody out there that they could go get, bring them in, and instantly this Jets team becomes better on offense. I don't think anybody can do that with the weapons that they have there now. I think that you need to get some weapons in there for Sanchez. I think that they need to give this guy a fair chance to do something. They didn't give him a fair chance this year, like we already mentioned. They didn't bring in any weapons, any receivers in the offseason. They brought in Tim Tebow, who did nothing but completely destroy Sanchez's confidence, no matter what needs to be said in that locker room. Half the fans in New York wanted Tebow in on every play. Half the people in the country wanted Tebow in just to see if he could produce the same kind of magic that he did in Denver. And, you know, that didn't do anything to help Mark Sanchez to progress as a quarterback and to make this offense any better. So, you know, do I think that Mark Sanchez is a problem? I think that his erratic play and some of his decision-making is a problem, but I think that some of those things get fixed and get shored up if they get some weapons around him to help bolster him. You know, the Jets were off and on as a defense last year. Sometimes they looked terrible. Sometimes they looked pretty decent. This is where I think that the two stories that we've talked about merge together. I think that Darrell Revis is a great corner, and, you know, barring any setbacks from his recovery, I think he's going to continue to be a great corner in this league. But do I think that they could possibly use Darrell Revis in a trade situation to get some pieces for Mark Sanchez and make that offense formidable as well, which in turn will then make their defense better because they aren't on the field all the time? I think that that's something that they need to dive into, and I think that's entirely the reason why they're looking at moving Darrell Revis in the first place, is to try and give Mark a fair shake at things.
All right, Sirius, same question to you. Fix the Jets. Go.
Blow the whole thing up and start over.
You know, honestly, gentlemen, I mean, the Jets right now are in a whirlwind of issues. Let's start offensively, since that seems to be where this question is meant to go. Sanchez, I'm not going to say he's not the problem, but I'm definitely going to say he's not part of the solution. You know, I mean, there have been several times over the course of his career that you sat there and looked at him and go, what the hell were you looking at? What were you throwing? And, you know, you really can't blame, you know, receivers. You really can't blame, you know, lack of running game, whatever, on that, because these are just bonehead decisions. I mean, I can understand if passes were hitting, you know, people in the hands and they're just dropping them. I can understand, you know, if, you know, he had no offensive line and, you know, he was running back there for his life, kind of like he was his pad here, or whatever the case may be. But 99.9% of the situations that come about with Buck Sanchez are the WTF moments, especially if you're a quarterback, you know. So I'm not saying he's a part of the problem, but he's just a part of the solution. A. B. Running games, there were no ground and pound run type of anything. You know, Sean Green had another horrible year by horrible standards. And they don't have any type of running game with the speaker whatsoever. People thought, again, like the Tim Tebow situation, he was going to come in and, you know, do some work. Obviously, that didn't happen. He only saw the field, you know, snap-wise, I think 15 to 20 times all year, you know. So that definitely was not getting it done. Receiver-wise, again, we all said this, so I'm going to be the dead horse. Antonio going down was huge. Their stubbornness to bring in notable receivers that have done work with them previously. Again, Pico was mentioned, you know, Brandon Edwards was mentioned, T.O. was out there, Chad Johnson was out there. There were a couple of people that were out there that could have came into the organization and helped them out to get the, quote, explosiveness back to the Jets organization. That didn't happen, yet they still sat there and wanted to put the finger at, you know, Mark Sanchez, or you know, other situations. Defensively, I think this had to be the worst defense of Rex Ryan coaching that I've ever seen in my life. You know, teams were running on this squad, teams were throwing on the squad, and I understand Darrell Revis is one hell of a corner, but he, you know, took away one of the sides of the field, but teams were still running on these guys, you know, and I understand that with injuries, that may have played a role in that. But, again, to me, defense is about heart. Defense is about making sure you're in the right place at the right time. Defense is about making sure you do what you need to do from an F and O standpoint to prevent an offensive player from getting to his spot and getting to where he wants. And that, to me, that's a mindset. And right now, you know, I think we could all sit here and say that the New York Jets really and step up and play defense like we know that they have been capable of doing. So special teams, again, this team was horrible teams-wise. So, again, I mean, I thought I'd say that this better blow it up and start over. You know, definitely start looking to trade some people, some players. If, you know, if Jeff or Hell bent on keeping Rex Ryan at the helm, then they got to understand that what was working before is not working now. You know, this is an ever-going changing league. You got people in your division that are really on the upswing, in my opinion. I like the Miami Dolphins. I think they're going to be on the upswing, depending upon what they do this upcoming offseason. The Buffalo Bills, they could be on the upswing as well. We all know New England is, you know, always at the tip of the top of that division. So if you're the Jets, you really got to first look at what's going on in your division and make changes to, A, win your division. And right now, they can't even beat a Pee Wee football team. So.
All right, Tim. Kind of a different question for you. What parts of the Jets' offense is salvageable for the future? Because it's easier to talk about what's right about the Jets offense than it is to talk about what's wrong about it.
Oh, you know, I don't know what's salvageable. You look at a guy like Sanchez, and quite honestly, I think Sanchez could be a good quarterback in this league. The problem is I don't think he can be a good quarterback in New York. I don't think he can handle the pressure. You notice once Tebow got there, once, you know, he got him to back-to-back AFC championships, the expectations were raised, and they were unfairly raised because he didn't get them there. That was their defense and their running game. You got to remember, they had LT when they were doing that. So, you know, it really wasn't Sanchez that was leading this team to those AFC championships. He was kind of, you know, I don't want to say it, but the Brad Johnson on Tampa Bay and the, you know, you can go back to the Baltimore team. He was just kind of riding there and being a game manager. He had a big game in the playoffs, and people started going nuts over it. So I think he could be a good quarterback on a different team. The expectations are too high in New York for him and what people are expecting. Number two, Sean Green is absolutely dreadful as a running back. He's not a safety blanket. Sanchez cannot throw him the ball because Sean Green can't catch a cold. So you're basically eliminating his safety valve, especially once Dustin Keller went down. He lost him. So now you're taking away the two guys that are absolutely your safety blanket. Their wide receivers aren't explosive. And Santonio is a good receiver. He's not a great receiver. So the weapons around Sanchez are not exactly top-notch. It just so happens that the Lions don't have a fourth-round pick, and I would be willing to give them a certain receiver that is causing some problems, who can be a playmaker and can be a good receiver if his head's screwed on straight. So if they'd like to offer a first-round pick, I'm trying to get rid of a guy that's a headache, sir. I'm not trying to get rid of
guys. Headache song ain't that bad of a headache, man.
He's Nate Burleson, man. He's talking about Nate Burleson. He's talking about
I am not. Hey,
Burleson.
You know what?
Burleson.
Of course, T.Y. will come to the defense of another T.Y. because Titus Young is an absolute head case. So if they would like to offer a fourth-round pick for Titus Young, I would take that and even throw back like a fifth-round pick for them to take him off this team.
Okay, so and really, since you just brought it up, that was the next topic that I was about to get into, was Titus Young and the Detroit Lions. Titus Young comes out and does something that very few players do. He asked to be cut from the Detroit Lions, and basically he said, "I'm tired of being threatened by being cut." So he says, "Cut me already, I'll go find my own way." Now, obviously, he's a second-round pick. He played rather well at times. He showed flashes of brilliance, and really he has the potential to be a good wide receiver on a team. But my problem with Titus Young is that he's drawing too much attention to himself, and I think he believes he's a number one wide receiver. And I don't think there is a team in this league right now where Titus Young would be a number one wide receiver. Would he make a very good number two? Yes, that's why we drafted him in the second round when we had Nate Burleson, who was also a very good number two wide receiver. But the problem is he's showing an extreme lack of maturity, and that's the one thing that Detroit does not need right now is people causing drama in that locker room. So to me, I'm right with you, Tim. If we can get a fourth round pick for Titus Young from the Jets, I would even say I personally would think he would be worth a third, but it'd be worth that one round degradation just to make sure that he's not on the team. But the problem becomes with Detroit, and I've been following their cap situation kind of closely. They have a whole bunch of older players that they'd like to get rid of. Kyle VandenBosch, who's eating up a lot of cap. Nate Burleson, who's eating up quite a bit of cap. Backus, who's taking up a lot of cap. Dominic Raiola, who's taking up quite a bit of cap. But as I'm listing these names, they don't have enough in the coffers and in draft picks to get rid of them all. And plus, that would cause, you know, some real turmoil in the locker room, I would imagine, without all that veteran leadership. So, Tim, I'm going to come back to you on this question. Which of those guys, because you are a Lions fan, so I'm going to bring up this to you. Which of these guys is most likely staying in Detroit?
Without a doubt, Nate Burleson. No doubt about it. The receiver position with Broyles going down, with Titus Young being an idiot and bipolar, Burleson's coming back. And to his, you know, TP doesn't care for him, but I've even gotten TP to admit that he was having a good season before he got hurt this year. So put that on the record that Tyrone Powell did support Nate Burleson before he got hurt this year.
You don't have any evidence or conclusive.
I recorded it, and it will be played later on the show.
Fine. Well, you do this. You find the recording and put it on the show right now. Don't put that bull crap on me.
If we were in the booth,
the referee would say there is not inconclusive evidence. The ball will go the other way.
And James, you know, with the whole draft pick thing, like you said with Titus Young, he's not getting a third, he's not getting a fourth, he's not getting a fifth. He's getting cut. We're not going to be able to deal this guy. No one's going to take him for a draft pick. The only way I see him being dealt is if the Lions are in the third round and they want to move up four spots and they say, we'll swap you picks and throw in Titus Young. That's about all Titus Young is worth to anybody in the NFL right now. With what he's doing on Twitter, with what he's done in the locker room, I don't know how, you know, publicized it was around the globe, but when Kelvin went to the Pro Bowl last year, he took all the receivers on the team with him and paid for everybody. He did not invite Titus Young on that trip. So that just tells you what the fellow receivers on this team thought of Titus Young last year. He complains about not getting the ball, yet he set a rookie record for the Detroit Lions in targets. He had the same amount of targets as what Calvin Johnson had in his rookie year. That is a Lions record. So Titus Young has nothing to complain about right now.
All right, Sirius, I'm going to bring this topic up to you. Let's say, for argument's sake, that Mike Wallace bolts from the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Don't even think about it.
And you can't find anybody else.
Titus Young ain't coming to Pittsburgh. He can't come to Pittsburgh. And the thing is, I mean, I understand where you're going with this question, but there's a certain level of swag that we have in Pittsburgh. I don't want to say it's somewhat of like a patriot type of mentality where we don't deal with head cases and drama too well in Pittsburgh. Case in point, Caleb Rainey just got cut for allegedly beating up his girlfriend. You know, now she's dropping the charges or whatever that can be. Titus Young would not survive in Pittsburgh. James Harrison would fuck him up, literally. It would happen in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, and I figured that's where you're going to go. Eric, same question to you. I believe you're a Bengals fan, if I remember correctly.
You're 49ers.
Oh, you're 49ers? Okay, never mind.
Yep.
Okay, let's say Randy Moss retires at the end of the season. Is Titus on your radar? As a number three, because I know you still have Mario Manningham sitting there as a number three wide receiver who could easily be a number two on most teams. So so let's say Randy Moss is retired. Is Titus Young a number three wide receiver on the San Francisco 49ers?
You know, he's definitely a good receiver. I don't understand why or if we don't know if this is happening. If Calvin Johnson and some of those veterans are trying to steer him right, you know what I mean? Just like you said, I mean, his maturity issue is not – I mean, that's a big problem. I mean, why would you just want to be cut? The reason you're being threatened is because you're not performing – and you're thinking that you're something you're not. Go out and let your game do the talking for you. Go out and play football. That's what you're paid to do. The guy is a legitimate number two receiver. And with some veteran leadership, there's still time to salvage this guy. So, you know, the right situation, if I had a guy committed to kind of help this guy, I'd definitely take a chance on him, but he's only going to get one more chance because you don't get too many chances in this league. Look at Terrell Owens and Chad Johnson, perfect example. People brought that up on the last segment with the Jets, but I mean, the Jets were already in turmoil. What are you going to bring a, you know, soap opera in with Terrell Owens and then another one in with Chad Johnson? I mean, they both were having problems. They're clearly not the same players they were. So the Jets were kind of, you know, they had their hands tied. They really had no choice. But, yeah, Titus Young, good fit. The Jets, you know, he might be a nice fit over there too. But, yeah, I'd definitely take a chance on the guy because he does have some skills.
All right, Brandon, thus far we've only got one person saying that he would put any sock into Titus Young, even though it would be as a number three wide receiver. You're the Cincinnati Bengals, the team that historically was known for picking up head cases. Many times they work. Vontae Burfict, a perfect example, a guy who was considered at one point a first-round pick, just completely free-falls and goes out of the draft, and he's successful for the Cincinnati Bengals. But then there's other guys that have not been so successful. But so what do you think about Titus Young? Is Titus Young a Cincinnati Bengal?
Well, first off, to hit on what E-Dub just said, he says that the Jets had their hands tied but because of the fact that there wasn't the skill out there that was up to the level that wasn't a drama. I think that you tie your hands even more by not making a move and not having an offensive threat. This game, if you don't take chances, you don't succeed. You know, Bill Belichick himself is quoted as saying, the way to win in this league is to attack, not to sit back and play defense and wait for the other team to attack. So, you know, that just picks up on that real quick. And then, you know, the Titus Young thing, look, this guy tweeted out, never needed the money, give me a dollar and a ball, I bet I come back. Hashtag Hall of Fame. Look, okay? The end of Chad Johnson's career was marked by him putting on a Hall of Fame jacket for a touchdown celebration and then never living up to anything he did on the field after that. If you start throwing around the Hall of Fame and you start throwing around how great you are and you haven't accomplished anything in this league, nothing in this league, that is a one-way ticket to not be on a team. That is all there is to it. E-Dub, if you think that it's a good idea for your San Francisco 49ers, who are a unit with cohesion and chemistry, and go out and play for each other and you know, up against all odds and doesn't matter, we are a team and we're going to play that way, mm-hmm. I'm going to tell you right now, the quickest way to blow that up and to get you guys out of the playoffs next year in a very competitive mm-hmm. NFC West would be to pick up Titus Young and throw him into the mix in that locker room.
I don't agree with that one bit because Jim Harbaugh is a great coach. He works well with young kids and he motivates them. Titus Young, his career is not over, okay? He's a young kid. All he needs is guidance and to be humbled. And guess what? No, the 49ers would not let that happen. They would cut him immediately like they did with Brandon Jacobs and Braylon Edwards. Trust me, Jim Harbaugh wouldn't go for it. But that would be a good fit for him to go to get humbled and to have guys like Patrick Willis get in his face, Vernon Davis especially. I mean, that would be a great fit for him because then he would have no choice. He would be in a family. Like you just said, Detroit is a lost franchise. There's no camaraderie there. I mean, look at that team. They had one good run. They got beat by the 49ers in week 6 in their run when they were 6-0, and they've fallen ever since that time. For you to say Titus Young would destroy that team is lunacy because, A, they wouldn't allow it, and, B, he's in a great situation to have leadership, and he has that brotherhood. And now I think you're wrong by saying that.
Go ahead.
Yeah, Davis is a master motivator. Look what happened to him. And now he has serving as a motivator and a leader and a mentor. And that's all Titus Young needs. He hasn't had a mentor. He has a guy like Chad Johnson that, you know, boasts himself. How is he going to learn from that?
But the difference
is,
E-Dub, listen, the difference is Vernon Davis, nothing happened to Vernon Davis. Vernon Davis happened to
himself.
Vernon
Davis was one of the most selfish, self-centered, cocky persons you'll ever meet. He was a gimme the ball, me first.
And that's exactly what I just said. Thank you for agreeing with me. The only thing that I'm saying is that it wasn't Jim Harbaugh that turned Vernon Davis around. It was Vernon Davis realizing by himself that his actions were a detriment to his own team, plus the fact that Mike Singletary sat his ass on the bench and didn't let him play.
Yep, and guess what? Harbaugh is that same type of coach, and you just said it perfectly. Vernon Davis was Titus Young. Vernon Davis has been there. Vernon Davis would straighten this guy out. Please believe it, or he would be gone. It would be a nice fit.
Vernon Davis would need a psychiatrist and a lot of drugs to straighten this guy out.
No, you're acting like, you know what, you know who needs a psychiatrist? Is anybody that's dealt with Terrell Owens. He's destroyed every quarterback's future after that. Garcia, McNabb, Romo, they all turned in, I mean, their careers
Romo's
were never the same. Yeah, well, guess what? Romo's crap. That's a question for another, you know, day
Romo's,
or a segment.
Romo's his quarterback.
Hey, here's the deal. The bottom line is he would be a great fit in San Francisco because he would be in a family atmosphere. We are one well-oiled machine here. There is, look around you, there is superstars galore. None of them boast. I mean, the 49ers have over a handful of the best players in the NFL right now, and none of them act like that. They get out there and perform. They would make a difference in Titus Young's career. He's never had somebody grab him and say, hey, you know, come on, look at the Lions organization. Jim Schwartz, terrible coach in my eyes. I mean, he can't get his players to perform. They got boatloads of talent there in Detroit. That would be a killer combo, Titus Young and Calvin Johnson, just to let you guys know. And you're acting like his career's over. This kid's young. He's 23 years old, man. He just needs guidance. Yeah, he's acting immature right now. We all know that. But you are in this league to win. He is a viable weapon if he gets his act together. And with the right leadership and people around him, I believe he can.
But you don't want to spend. You don't want to spend the kind of money that this guy is wanting to get. He wants big money. He wants to be his name in lights. He wants to be the everything on a team. You don't.
You
can't spend the money to have a project like that.
Well, guess what? You just let the free agent period go by, and after no one signs him, you approach the guy and offer him what you want to offer him, and that's going to be his only choice. I completely get what you're saying. I wouldn't pay the guy boatloads of money. Maybe I would give the guy a 1 year, $3 million deal, or a 2 year, $5.5 million deal, or something like that. You know, he's definitely not worth the big money.
Okay, so I just want to correct something here. Titus Young never said anything about money. He's talking about wanting to be a number one wide receiver in the league. He's not talking about
getting paid
like a number one wide receiver. He wants to get the ball. He wants to catch the ball. And will that if it works, if he gets that, will he eventually want more money? Absolutely. I have no doubt about that. But right now, he's just asking for the opportunity to prove that he is that number one wide receiver.
James, I mean, honestly, the two kind of go hand in hand, you know what I'm saying? Number one wide receiver wants to get paid number one wide receiver type of money. So even though he really hasn't came out and said, hey, you know, give me X amount of dollars, he said that he wants that he is a number one wide receiver. He wants to be a number one wide receiver. So, you know, he's kind of subliminally saying, yo, I want more money.
All right, TP, I'm going to change this up a little bit. Is there, because a lot of people, save Eric, are saying Titus Young's a cancer. Titus Young won't do well anywhere, and he will destroy organizations. Do you believe there is any teams out there that would be a good place for Titus Young to end up?
That's tough. I don't know, man. I want to see how things pan out for Titus, man. I mean, he obviously had a good first year with Detroit. I really don't want to downplay too much of what he did. He got to the playoffs with these guys, had a couple of key catches. And I think after, you know, him getting his first year into the NFL and getting his feet wet by getting into the playoffs, it built an ego in him. So, I mean, this puts Detroit in a tougher situation. I'm not really solely concerned about Titus. I'm concerned about what pieces they're going to put around Calvin, man. They're just going to piece by piece this organization. I'm worried about the coaching staff. I'm not concerned about what Titus does, because at the end of the day, Titus is going to look at this, and then there aren't going to be teams that are biting at the bit for him, and then he's going to want to be a part of this organization. He can act tough right now because he has a few months. So he can have a few months before he jumps into, you know, off-season situations. But he'll think about the mistakes that he did, i.e. the same situation that he did to Delmas when he punched Delmas in the face. Like, he's going to lose himself by acting, you know, bigger than the NFL, bigger than any organization that might be enticed by him. But if I were to think of teams that could go after him, it'd be more or less a team that needs a good third option. On Detroit, I was looking at him to be the number two, because I wasn't totally sold on Nate until Nate actually started playing decent in the first couple of games, and then he broke his leg. Then they looked at Titus, and then Titus started trying to do his own thing. So, you got to get an offensive coordinator to look into it and basically change the face of what he's doing to a team right now and his morale as a young player in the NFL. But I can't think offhand any team that would be enticed by the services of Titus Young right now.
Well, I, first of all, I am a believer in Titus Young as an athlete. I was very big on him coming into the draft, and for good reason. The guy is a very talented wide receiver. The guy can make plays. He runs crisp routes. He does without this situation with I don't even know what to call it, but without this personality situation with Titus Young, he has the potential to be one of the better number two wide receivers in the league, right next to Julio Jones. I mean, that's he's not to that level, but he's still very good as a number two wide receiver. The only I think San Francisco could be a player for it. I'm going to be honest. I think that E-Dub hit it right on the head. He needs to go to a place that will either straighten him out or end his career. And right now there's only two franchises that I think – well, three franchises that I think would have that ability. Two of them are no surprise, San Francisco, New England. The last one is a surprise, the Cincinnati Bengals. Now, they had a bad track record early on with this kind of thing, but they've really turned that around. I don't know how they turned it around, because they had the same head coach for the entire time. But if you start looking at the guys that they've brought in, and usually it's the guys who are desperate to get back in the league. And if that kind of situation happens again, I could see Cincinnati being that last refuge for a guy like Titus Young. If the Lions do cut him. If the Lions do cut him, and he sits there and the offseason goes by and nobody takes a look, Cincinnati's a team that has a need at the number two wide receiver position right next to A.J. Green, which will ironically enough, be pretty much the exact same situation he's in Detroit, because A.J. Green is that Calvin Johnson caliber type wide receiver. He just won't have as good of a quarterback, in my opinion, but I digress. But if you look at the guys that they've been able to get to succeed, Vontae Burfict succeeds now in Cincinnati. Pac-Man Jones has finally stayed out of trouble in Cincinnati. So I think that Cincinnati could be that place. I think New England, basically, if you're cut from New England for personality issues, your career's over. You can look into history and show how that works. And right now, I have real questions of them re-signing Wes Welker at this point, because he's going to want considerable coin. And it's something that New England does all too often is re-signs a Julian Edelman and gets rid of a Wes Welker. Or you've seen them let Richard Seymour get traded away. These are things that New England does, and that could be something that would work out well for the New England Patriots if they brought in a Titus Young and he straightened himself out. And we already talked about San Francisco. So those are the teams, in my opinion, that with the personality issues, Titus Young is a possibility for. Without that, there are half a dozen other teams that would be into the fold for that. But TP, I want to bring you in at the beginning of this next topic, because we've got three players confirming retirement, and these guys have a real possibility of being first ballot Hall of Famers, and every single one of them is guaranteed Hall of Fame at some point. Jeff Saturday has decided to retire. Of course, Tony Gonzalez is about 95% there, but I believe he has since.
There's still a chance,
but I think he's since come to the realization that he's probably gone. And then Ray Lewis has also said that he will likely be, or he is definitely out at the end of this year. There's other possibilities. Randy Moss and Ed Reed are both high possibilities for also retiring at the end of the year. So, TP, I guess my question is, what else are your thoughts as far as retirees going? Are all these guys first ballot Hall of Famers? And I'm talking, and I'll include Randy Moss and Ed Reed into this. Are these guys all first ballot?
I
want to
know where you're getting
Randy Moss
confirming that he's retiring. Where did you hear that, James?
Where did I hear about Randy Moss
retiring? Yes.
There's been nothing, but I don't think Randy Moss would come out and publicly
say that. We'll remove that. Well, let's just remove that. Let's talk about
Tony Gonzalez. You know,
hold on. Aaron, if you want to be timeless, you go to your local government center or city hall and you change your name. Right now, he's talking to me. Hold on. So let's do it like this. We'll talk about Jeff Saturday, Tony Gonzalez, and Ray Lewis. I'm not going off of make-believe or mishap, okay? Jeff Saturday, I actually got a ton of respect for because of where he's come from off of two, top-notch quarterbacks in the league, one when he was with the Colts and, finishing out the season with Aaron Rodgers and going on some crazy rides, if you will, with both quarterbacks, if I have to hold that perspective. All of the teams that he's been a part of have basically been playoff relevant. Tony Gonzalez, with the thing that JC threw out there, the way that he performed this season, somebody a part of that Atlanta organization, either somebody of that Gonzalez family, let him know that he is not washed up. I mean, personally, if he was going up against Detroit or something, I don't want him to play. But he does not look like he's washed up. He still has a ton of talent left in the tank, and he could play for a ring. I still think that he would definitely be a cornerstone on the offense for Matty Ice, because Matty Ice and him have that connection. A lot of times when Matt Ryan was in trouble, he would go to Tony G and pick up that yardage. So it's just going to be tough to see Tony G be moved in that light. And Ray Lewis, I mean, this is the all-else game right here. The Super Bowl coming up, and he's basically going to be putting it all on the line, but it's just a terrible situation where that offense is just as potent as his defense is. So that defense is going to have to step up as much as possible to send Ray off the right way. Of course, all of these guys are first ballot Hall of Famers in my eyes. The only one that probably may be questionable is Jeff Saturday, but I doubt that. But that's the only way I see this.
All right, JC. I guess TP brings up an interesting topic here. Now, while I really am not 100% sure that Gonzalez is going, there's a chance he comes back, but 95% is a pretty big percentage. Let's put it that way.
It is.
But what about these other, because Ed Reed – is not – now, Randy Moss may be something I'm pulling out of air just because of his age, but Ed Reed has been contemplating retirement for the past 3 years now. Every year he goes into the offseason thinking this might be my last year, and eventually one of these times is going to be his last year. I can't imagine how long he's going to stick around. So what are your thoughts? How many of these guys so do you think that there's a chance for Ed Reed to come back or Tony Gonzalez? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I'll start with Ed Reed. Ed Reed said this week already that he was definitely 100% coming back this year,
which
is something that he doesn't normally say. And I've said the same thing as you just did, that, you know, I thought he would also contemplate retirement. I thought he might go out with the Super Bowl as well. But he came out this week and squashed all that. As for Tony Gonzalez, I am officially a part of the movement to keep Tony G. He must come back. He must come back for 2 years. He must come back for as long as I need him until they figure out how to cover the tight end in Atlanta, until they figure out how to not let Frank Gore run up the right side. Okay, I'm done. I'll digress. But, you know, do I think Gonzalez will retire ultimately? I'm afraid he might. I have the extreme hope that I'm wrong. But all his interviews all year led you to believe that he was done. Like, he was going to put everything into this year, and whatever he got out of it, he got out of it. And at the end of that game last Sunday, you could tell it was a tough game to lose, but he was just spent. He was done. You know, he left it all out there. As for Jeff Saturday, I have a lot of respect for Jeff Saturday as well. You know, for him to do what he did this year, where the Packers coaching staff had all the trust in the world in him, and he still realized his own skill level wasn't up to protect his quarterback and to let the young guy get in and show the young guy the ropes and show him what calls to make and so on and so forth. I mean, is he a Hall of Famer? I mean, he works side by side with one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time. I'd have to say, yeah. First ballot? No. But that's a story for another day. And then there's the hypotheticals from there, but that's pretty much a breakdown for me. Ray Lewis is an all-time great. I mean, Hall of Fame, first ballot, speech will be incredible.
All right, Brandon, same question to you. What do you think about these guys retiring? You guys definitely caught me up on Ed Reed, so I won't throw his name out there anymore. And is there anybody else, any of these bigger names that you think will retire this year?
Well, I mean, look, I think that, you know, Tony Gonzalez, to me, is quite possibly the greatest tight end to ever play the game. When you look at the numbers, when you look at what he's done, you know, you can't hang the fact that he played in Kansas City on a most of the time worthless franchise to against him because he didn't have any playoff wins or Super Bowls or anything like that. What he's able to accomplish on the field as a tight end is you know, possibly paralleled but never exceeded. He showed, you know, even in the NFC Championship game, that he's still a beast when it comes to athletic ability. Physically, do I think Tony Gonzalez has got it in him to play for another 2, 3, 4 years even? I absolutely do. I think he could play into his young early 40s with as good a shape as he's in and how well he takes care of his body. The issue is, I believe that Tony Gonzalez is of the belief that he wants to go out in his own way. He wants to go out on top. He wants to go out being remembered as one of the best. He doesn't want to see that decline in his game and have other people see that about him when it does and if it does happen. So that being the case, the 95%, I really do believe that's closer to 100. I think we've seen the last of Tony G on the field. You know, Jeff Saturday is a great lineman for a long time. You don't really need to say anything more. You know, you look at what he did with those Indianapolis Colts teams on you know, lines that were skill-wise not the best, and he was able to help keep Peyton Manning clean a lot of the time, and he did a great job there. you know, and obviously Ray Lewis's career and his resume speaks for itself. As far as Ed Reed goes, I'm extremely happy that Ed Reed came out this week and did announce that there is no question about it. He will be back. I think that gives the fans in Baltimore something that will definitely help them having losing their cornerstone on defense in Ray Lewis to retirement. I believe that that helps helps with that franchise a little bit and being a little bit more comfortable going into next season. And also, you know, getting back to the Tony G thing, though, guys. I mean, if there's anybody in the league that's ever played a better tight end, than apparently I haven't watched the film on it, because this guy can block, this guy can make the hard catches. He's a sure-handed receiver. He can run after the catch. I mean, this guy really did everything that you could ask a tight end to do. And on top of that, he's been a pro. He's been a guy who's been a real team player. And you know, I'm not a fan of the Atlanta Falcons. I'm not a fan of the Kansas City Chiefs. I'm a fan of Tony Gonzalez, though. The guy knows how to play the game the right way, and it will be sad to not see him on an NFL field next year.
All right, Sirius, same question to you. What do you think about these guys retiring? And is there anybody else on the horizon, do you think, about that might retire as well?
Let me say this, James. You knew how, when you mentioned Randy Moss, that Tomlin was going to go crazy. So I don't even know why you did that to yourself. And if I was able to say what I was going to say before I got interrupted, they would have figured that out. But I digress. First of all, the whole situation with Ray Lewis, obviously, first ballot Hall of Famer, we all knew what was going on there. So we're all proud of Ray Lewis, you know, for his accomplishments. Tony Gonzalez, man, like my man alluded to beforehand, you know, I grew up watching this man play the game the right way. We really never seen him in the public limelight for anything negative. So I'm proud of that situation. Just Saturday, you know, this guy goes unmatched. You know, Peyton Manning appreciates him a lot, you know, for the one season he played with Aaron Rodgers. You know, he's one of the best centers to ever have done it. I don't think anybody else kind of is on the horizon to retire, but it is what it is. Gentlemen, I got to jump off here. I'll catch up with you guys later, man.
All right, Sirius. Now, I think I skipped. Did I get to you on this one, Eric?
What was that?
I said, did I get to you on this one? Did you get a chance to talk about Tony Gonzalez and the rest of them?
No.
All right, then go right ahead.
Yeah, you know, the sad thing about Ray Lewis, he was like the face of the NFL, so, you know, it's going to be hard not seeing him there next year. You know, definitely first ballot Hall of Famer. Possibly one of the best defenders ever to play in all of football. You know, just a class act. One of the best leaders, you know, all around. So, you know, he's going to be missed. Tony Gonzalez, same thing. You know, I'm hoping, you know, with that grain of salt, that he'll return next year like Ed Reed decided to do. That would be cool because Atlanta's only up and coming. I mean, we all know what he brings to the table. He played this year like he did his first year in the league. I mean, the guy literally hasn't missed a beat. Another first ballot Hall of Famer for sure in my eyes. Jeff Saturday, you know, one of the best facilitating, smartest centers the game has seen. And part of that was, like we all said, I mean, he was right there with another for sure Hall of Famer in Peyton Manning. So, you know, I don't know if he's going to be first ballot, but he's definitely going to be in the Hall of Fame. The NFL is definitely losing three quality players this year, especially if Tony Gonzalez does decide to retire. We're good.
James, are you there? We might have a technical difficulty again.
Yep.
All right. No, I just didn't click properly. So yeah, I think we got to everybody on this topic. So I do want to move on to another topic that I find interesting. I don't know if you guys are or not, but Ozzie Newsome came out earlier this week and basically said that regardless of what happens next week, the offer to Joe Flacco, who is scheduled to be a free agent at the end of the season, will remain the same. So, Eric, I'm going to come right back to you on this. Is this a smart move by Ozzie Newsome saying, you know what, it doesn't matter what happens in the Super Bowl, you're not getting a dollar more out of us?
Yeah, you know, it's a horrible move, you know, especially with the timing of this right before the Super Bowl. His best answer would have been, that's between me and Joe, and we'll deal with that at the end of the season. You know, granted, Flacco has shown huge strides this year. He's turning into the quarterback that the Ravens thought he could be when they drafted him. You know, and when he throws that kind of statement out, that kind of means that there is a money difference if he were to win the Super Bowl or to lose, because why would you come with a statement like that? You know what I'm saying? So, you know, the timing's wrong. He should have just left that alone, you know, let that between him and Flacco. Although I do think the Ravens are going to have to, you know, they're going to have to pay up, but I wouldn't give the guy Peyton Manning money, Brady or none of the top guys in the league. He's definitely a good quarterback. He's not at that level yet. So whether he thinks he is or not, or what type of money or contract he's expecting, I look for them to give him, you know, a five-year deal somewhere in the $30 to $40 million range. So the bad timing by Newsom for sure. TP, charge it.
Okay, since we're having a little technical difficulty, JC, your thoughts on Joe Flacco and his situation with the contract possibly. Do you think they're going to hand him down a hefty contract, especially his first five seasons at helm? He basically got to the playoffs with these guys, including, what, three different AFC championship games.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all they had to say was, I hope to have that problem. I hope to have to worry about whether or not my quarterback just won the Super Bowl or not to see if he wants more money. Now, that being said, the $30 to $40 million offer that E-Dub just said, the Ravens would sign for that right now. I have a feeling Flacco's going to want much, much, much more. And if I was Joe Flacco's camp, the Falcons are about to start negotiating with Matt Ryan on a new deal. I would sit back and I would just wait. And whenever Matt Ryan gets, I would look at my agent and say, I'll take 20% more of what he got, please. Because Joe Flacco, as inconsistent as he's been in the regular season, you cannot gripe with how he's played in the postseason. His postseason play has been excellent. He's won games every single season. He's been three conference championship games, going to his first Super Bowl. What more can you ask of your quarterback other than winning the whole damn thing? Flacco's going to get a big number. I think he's going to get a bigger number than any of us expect. And, you know, Super Bowl time comes around, and there's always somebody on the football team, whether it's management or player, that just cannot keep their foot out of their mouth. It's amazing the stupid statements that come out of these people, and now it's news.
All right. So Brandon, I'm going to switch up the question a little bit. Is Joe Flacco worth top five, top six quarterback money at this point?
Oh, man. That's a tough question to ask me. You know, what I'll say is this. Joe Flacco, with his teams in the playoffs, honestly, you know, you got to pick Joe Flacco over almost any other quarterback in the league right now. He was able to beat Peyton. He was able to beat Tom Brady. You know, you can't bring Andrew Luck into the consideration. He was able to beat him, too. You know, he puts up great numbers in the playoffs. It seems like somebody all right over there? Seems like he gets you know, more focused and more poised when the playoffs hit. And you know, if they win a Super Bowl you know, it is what it is. The thing that I want to be careful of, though, is that we're not too critical of what is possibly the best front office guy in the NFL in Ozzie Newsome. I can tell you this, that he has a plan for saying what he said. There is nothing that has come out of this guy's mouth that was said, and then he went back and was like, oh, I can't believe I did that. No. He had a complete plan and a complete reason why he did that. Could some of this be a little bit of smoke and mirrors? I believe it could be, to show the San Francisco 49ers a little bit of discord in the franchise that really isn't there. I really think that Ozzie Newsome does plan on giving Joe Flacco a decent-sized contract, and I don't think that it has anything to do with his performance this weekend. I believe that that has more to do with that he has already proven himself in the playoffs and getting them to this Super Bowl and doing the things that he's already done. Also, another reason that he may say something like this that we're not considering here is that there's a good possibility that he did this to motivate Joe Flacco. And we'll see if it works or if it doesn't work. But the bottom line is Joe Flacco is a very competitive guy, and he loves to put his game up against other people's game. I don't know if you've heard some of the NFL mic'd up stuff that he does or anything like that, but this guy is the kind of guy where he loves to be in constant competition with other people. Now, I understand that the Super Bowl needs no motivation. This is for all the marbles. But the bottom line is, if you can get your starting quarterback to come out and play with a chip on his shoulder even more so than the one that was already there, maybe this ends up being the genius move of the playoff, guys. Ozzie Newsome is not a dumb man, and Ozzie Newsome is not the kind of guy who's going to put his own foot in his mouth, because I will tell you this, Ozzie Newsome is making a play eventually to try and become the commissioner of this league.
All right. TP, same question to you. Is Joe Flacco worth top five or six quarterback money?
Possibly. The reason why, every year he's been here, he's gotten these guys to the playoff, and not just basing everything on him, because the Ravens defense has been consistent every year that he's been in the league. But you got to get an offense to make these plays. And, a lot of people can make a play for Taylor. Taylor could run the show. But you want a quarterback that's tall, that's been there before. And, Flacco makes a good, deep ball play. And he's also been effective at hitting, Pitta underneath right now. Now he has a staple at tight end consistently outside of when he had Todd Heap. Todd Heap was an injury-prone tight end. Now he has a tight end that's durable to make plays downfield. I think that's a great deal of respect that they have to give Flacco. Plus, the past 2 years, he's been in the AFC Championship game up against Tom Brady, where he actually made the play to beat Tom Brady last year. If Lee Evans catches that ball, he'd have been in two consecutive Super Bowls right now. They have to consider him. He threw out the elite situation. He might just be. So he might get that contract that he's looking for.
Yeah, and in my opinion, they have to pay him. They have to pay him pretty much what he wants. And I mean, just looking at the Baltimore Ravens situation and what is going on right now in NFL free agency and draft, they have to. I mean, let's put it this way. If they don't pay Joe Flacco what he wants and he leaves, what are they going to replace Joe Flacco with? I mean, are they going to go out there and get a Ryan Mallett? I mean, is that your answer, Ryan Mallett? And that's if New England decides to give him up. There's nothing forcing him to forcing them to give him up. And then you go to the draft. They're going to be picked 31 or 32, depending on how this game turns out. There's not going to be a Joe Flacco level quarterback at 31 or 32 in all likelihood. I mean, there's a couple of guys that I like that might be there at that point, but that's far from a guarantee either. So, basically, Joe Flacco's got all the power in this situation. I know Ozzie Newsome is very smart man, and he's probably doing that as a power play, saying, you know what, the offer's not going to change, so you might as well not try to overly negotiate this the point, but to me, it's something that might be a little bit of a desperation move on Ozzie Newsom's part, because he knows he's going to have to pay through the nose to keep Joe Flacco in town, with all things considered. So I think I got to everybody on that, right? Did I skip you, John? All right, so, go ahead.
Oh, I think you got to everybody, James.
All right, so... I'm sorry, are you trying to say something?
No, we're saying go ahead, James. You got to everybody.
All right, I keep on hearing something in the background. My fault. So, I mean, I think I should... We should talk a little bit about the Super Bowl this week. I don't want predictions. That's something we're going to save for next week. But to you, what's the biggest storyline, TP, going into this week, into the Super Bowl? What's the thing that interests you most about the Super Bowl coming into Super Bowl week?
There's a lot of storylines to draw up for this. The one thing I'm going to talk about right now, so I don't waste too much of the situation that we have for the upcoming week, I just say the brothers battling. That's it, just being the Hardball Bowl, because I don't want to get into the schematics of the players being involved and how big it is for both of these teams. I just want to talk about the brother situation, kind of get that out the way, which I know this is clearly going to be a heavy theme from, you know, now until next Sunday. So, you know, just having these guys, one being more of a defensive mind, one being more of an offensive mind, John Harbaugh being, you know, accredited for drafting basically everybody a part of that defense with the Ravens, Ray Lewis and, you know, Ray Rice, all of these guys that he's been involved with, and Jim Harbaugh changing the face of the San Francisco offense and making these guys a smash-mouth offense and making it work and on the fly, bringing in the read option and making them even more of a dangerous offense. You know, these brothers basically put a lot of this stuff together on the fly within this season, let alone John Harbaugh firing Cam Cameron right before the beginning of the end of the season. It's, you know, you got to give these brothers a lot of credit. They know what they're doing, and the NFL has a heck of a game in front of themselves.
Yep.
My technical difficulty again. Eric, your thoughts on this, since you are the Niner fan here.
I would have to say one of the biggest storylines is that the DA has decided not to press charges against Michael Crabtree. So he can go into this game fully focused at the task at hand, and that's winning a world championship. So, you know, that's a huge relief and great news for the 49ers, especially him. He can go on with his life and hopefully not put himself in situations like that anymore. But just like you said, Tyrone, this has the potential to be one of the best Super Bowls we've seen in years, just because how evenly matched these teams are. So that's all I'm going to say. I'm excited for it and excited for the show tomorrow and next week.
Okay, Dean Burgess, your thoughts on the matchup? Not the matchup, just a storyline. Just save a lot of the meat and potatoes for this upcoming week.
Well, I mean, really, I think that I'm less interested in the what's going to be talked about, as I am a little bit upset with the fact that everybody has decided to bring up the Ray Lewis topic and what happened back in you know, early 2000 with the double homicide and everything like that. Nobody was talking about this as an issue at the beginning of the season. Nobody was talking about this as an issue even when he announced his retirement. It's just now that they've been successful towards the end of his career and in the end of this postseason run, that people have started to bring up, you know, skeletons from the closet. And I think that's unfair. I believe, you know, even if – this is something to look at here, guys. Even if Ray Lewis were guilty of what he was accused of back in the day and ultimately acquitted of and pled out and reached agreements and everything like that, even if he were found guilty, it would have been a second-degree murder charge which carries a 10-year sentence, he would already be out of prison. Let's give it a rest, guys. This guy has done everything in his power and everything in the power of any human being on the planet to change his life around, to become a positive influence, and to surround himself with the correct people to make himself a successful and a worthwhile person in the NFL today. And, you know, I think that him having to answer all these questions about what happened back then, sure, I understand that it comes with the territory. It's Ray Lewis. He's one of the biggest names in football. But at the same time, there comes a point in time where, you know, you have to forgive a man of his past mistakes, and whether that's, you know, just surrounding himself with the wrong people or whatever the case may have been, he needs to, you know, kind of get a pass on this one, guys. He's done a lot of positive for the NFL that's getting swept under the rug because of something that, you know, isn't even sure as to what happened over 12 years ago.
Amen.
All right, Brandon, what are you going to be talking about throughout the Super Bowl week? Is there anything in particular that you find overly interesting about this the Super Bowl?
In all honesty, I really think that the interesting topic to talk about is going to be the emergence of the San Francisco 49ers and the young team that they have, and some of the younger star players that they have. Colin Kaepernick is just an amazing talent. But we have to remember that you only have a 10-game sample size. You know, be careful not to get too high on a guy before you see what he can do his second year in the league. You know, obviously I believe that, though, this is a game that's a passing of the torch, so to speak, between Ray Lewis, who, you know, arguably is one of the best middle linebackers of all time, and Patrick Willis, who, when Ray Lewis is gone, I believe becomes – without a doubt the best middle linebacker in the game to me. So, you know, I think that there's many, many, you know, interesting storylines. But you know, like I said, I just throw a little caution to the wind because the storylines aren't what plays the game. The teams do. And we also have one hell of a game set up on top of these storylines.
Oh, don't worry. We have an entire show dedicated to that for next week. That's why we're not going to go too deep into the analysis or predictions for the game, because we got a whole show next week where we're going to be talking all about the Super Bowl and stuff like that. Even we might even do position by position matchups. I don't quite know yet, but we do have about 3 minutes left. To me, what was most interesting about this is kind of what I was alluding to last week when I thought that it was going to be the Patriots versus the 49ers, but there's still a little bit of credence to it. It's the new style of quarterback, you know, the Colin Kaepernick, Russell Wilson, RG3 style quarterback on one side, and the more traditional style, Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, Joe Flacco style. And I'm not putting them as far as good as talent-wise in the same category, but they're still the same style of pocket-style quarterback. And that's something that I find very interesting, is that it makes me think about the future of the NFL. And I think this game is going to be right dead in the center of it about how this goes. I mean, yes, there are going to be a few more teams that are going to go to this to this running option style of offense, but it might not be as many if the Ravens pull this off. That, the Harbaugh brothers, and Torrey Smith is another great storyline to be talking about, Ray Lewis, and so forth. But with that said, we've got a little over a minute left, so it's time to give final shout-outs. And also, I want to know, the Senior Bowl is today. Are you watching? And I'll go to you first, Eric, on this.
Yes, I'm definitely going to check it out. Look at the hot new prospects that are up and coming for the NFL draft this year. So I look forward to being an exciting game.
All right, Brandon, same question to you, and also any final words or final shout-outs that you want to put out there as well.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'll absolutely be watching the Senior Bowl. I plan on going to pick up some wings, you know, sit around, maybe have a beer or two. You know, but the most important thing, you know, that we remember, guys, is that, you know, this weekend, being at the Senior Bowl, being the Pro Bowl, it's all about the fun of the game. Just remember that when we're watching. I know we don't all like watching these games, but, you know, these are games that are very instrumental and also very historically significant in the league. Make sure you check us out on the website at www.sportscitychefs.com. Check out the Facebook page, Twitter, follow us on there. You know, make sure you stop by, check out the player interviews, the blogs, everything, man. And I'll see you guys in the kitchen later on in the week.
All right, John, same question to you. And any final words you want to say before we close down the kitchen?
I'll check it out later on. You know, I'm always, once you get to the Senior Bowl part of it, you know, that intrigues me more than some of the other games. It's nice to see some of the young guys, see what they're going to do, see some of the guys that you haven't heard about all year. So I'll check that out later. Real quick, the world's going to see next week how passionate Ed Reed is about football. That's all I'm going to say about that for now. Other than that, you can follow me on Twitter, John_Corey. Check out all the stuff that the chefs are doing. Like you guys said, SportsCityChefs.com, MTRRadio.com. Check you guys later.
All right. TP, same question to you. And any final shout-outs or words that you want to say before we close down the kitchen tonight?
SportsCityChefs.com. Check out the website, the interviews, the blogs, and the chefs. See you tomorrow, Sunday, brunching it up. Me and Mark Mosley, you already know how we do. 7 days a week, the boys stay busy. I'm busy every doggone day of the week. Tell a friend that it's the chefs again. And if they don't know, now they know.
All right, that's it for me and TP. I'm definitely watching the Senior Bowl, if that wasn't obvious. I love this. This is, I think, one of the best off-season games of the year, with obvious exception of, you know, the playoff games in the NFL. I think that this is the one that shows the most, and this is the one where the players try the hardest, I believe, that they're out there to basically show their stuff and make themselves a lot of money in the NFL. Even the practices are televised, and I watch those too, so it's going to be a really exciting game in the Senior Bowl. I can't wait to see all the players, and even some of these unknown guys from small schools have started to get into the game, this game as well, so it's going to be really exciting to see how that goes out. As everybody said, SportsCityChefs.com. Check out all the shows here on the Sports City Chefs Network, including the one that I'm on Wednesday nights, the NFL Free-for-All / Front Office at Wednesday night at 11. But also check out all the great shows here on Sports City Chefs. With that said, as TP says, tell a friend to tell a friend, it's those chefs again. And if they don't know, it's going to be an exciting week. Now you know.
Day 378.